Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to our webinar. My name is Mark Ashton, and today we're going to be looking at the subject of non-disclosure agreements and entrepreneurship. And I think this issue of protecting your intellectual property is one of those fascinating topics, both at a staff level and at a company level. And I think NDAs are one of these tools that are often misunderstood or misapplied in many cases. We're going to be asking Nicolien Schoeman from Schoeman more to talk us through the different aspects of a non-disclosure agreement, but maybe just some general housekeeping. If any of you would like access to this webinar playback facility, you can reach it via our Iono channel. We'll also have it up on the Schoeman Law website as well as on a couple of our other social media channels. Maybe Nicolien, starting point, maybe just introduce the listeners to who you are and your area of speciality, and you know where people can find you in terms of social media and professional contact addresses.
Great. Thanks, Mark. I appreciate it. Well, welcome, everyone. My name is Nicolien Schoeman Lowe, and I'm the Managing Director, Founding Partner of Schoeman Lowe Incorporated. We are almost 12 years old this year, and we specialize in serving the needs of the entrepreneur. So we've always been passionate about business and the people behind business. So that is us in a nutshell. We are based in Cape Town, but we have clients all over South Africa. We are in the process of negotiating expansion into Gauteng, so watch this space. Other than that, we utilize technology in order to make distance simply a number. A bit about me, I'm an attorney by profession. I have a LLB, a LLM, with a focus on corporate law. And I have a postgraduate diploma in financial planning. So I suppose it sounds a bit odd, but I am a commercial attorney, and I also assist the business owners to ensure that they plan their estates and their wills in such a way that you build wealth from your hard-earned work through your business. So I often call myself the bridge between the business and the person. There we go.
Yeah, that sounds a great introduction. And maybe just before we kind of launch into this, there's often a perception that legal advice is expensive and it is for corporates. And when you often engage with an entrepreneur, they'll often tell you, yes, but they've been able to download this template off this internet site, or they've been able to, they've Googled the answer, much like you can Google your health circumstances on the internet. Maybe just as a kind of caveat to it, looking at a law firm that says it sort of services and supports entrepreneurs, you know, what do you think are the attributes that make for a good legal partner for servicing an entrepreneur?
Well, firstly, I think it's crucially important to understand the reality that your client faces. I myself started Schoeman Law when I was in my mid-20s. I was 24. And as building a business myself, subsequently, I also have interests in other businesses. I think it's important that you need to understand the reality of the time constraints and the cost constraints, and the need for the entrepreneur to remain creative in how they do things. So a legal partner shouldn't be obstructive. A legal partner should be supportive in the good and in the bad times. There should be open communication channels so that needs are expressed and budgets are aligned, and that you can get on with doing the work. So yes, it is unfortunately a perception that legal is out of the reach of most small businesses. And to a large degree, it sometimes is, from a fee perspective, from a budget perspective. And for that reason, we've created the SME self-service desk, which quintessentially is a contract builder tool. The first of its kind in South Africa, run by lawyers, by a firm of attorneys. So you're assured that all the documents on there are professionally drafted. And by answering a few questions, you custom make the document yourself. It takes a couple of minutes, and you download and you implement. And it even comes with podcasts and with supporting documents to show you how to implement it, which most of these templates that we get on the internet A, we don't always know where they come from and whether they are in fact South African and reliable, and B, whether they are actually what to do with them once you have them. So that is us. We've tried to say if the fee arrangement, and we're quite proud of it, that we aim to find a way of working together within the time and budget constraints, and we have a very good success rate with that, in excess of 80% actually of all our instructions that we can actually meet the budget and the time constraint. And where we can't, or where the agreement needed is very much a starting point perhaps, or need not be complex or industry specific in some cases, then this solution has been very well received and has made a real impact. Of course, it's a work in progress, and we listen to our customers. So if we need to add more documents, we do so. Currently, there are 37 of these documents on there, and it keeps growing.
So let's get into this topic of a non-disclosure agreement. And I think as we discussed, we'll try and break this into NDAs that relate to kind of professional relationships in terms of business. So in other words, if somebody is looking to acquire your business, or somebody is looking, you setting up a supplier or customer relationship. And then the second part of this, looking at NDAs as applied to an employee. Starting with a business relationship, What are the legal framework that guides it, guides NDAs, and in terms of things like what jurisdiction they're enforceable in? You know, what are the considerations that people need to look at when thinking about an NDA for either a customer, supplier, or somebody who's looking to acquire your business?
Well, NDAs, firstly, I think it's one of the documents as an entrepreneur or a small business that you absolutely have to have in your collection of starting documents. And perhaps you need a modified version for each context, which we'll get to in a minute. It's absolutely important. A, it sets a very clear trend in terms of an impression that you create with whoever you're negotiating, that you know what you're doing, and that you'll stand up for your rights, so to speak. So I think it sets the stage for having a very constructive negotiation if it is in place. Secondly, you rarely hear of NDAs being breached. There could be many reasons for it, but I do think to a large extent it is a deterrent that your ideas or your trade secrets and sensitive information doesn't find their way into the open market space or onto the internet, heaven forbid. So although it's not a fail-safe, it isn't something that is litigated on often. Of course, if it does get breached, then you may find yourself in an arbitration or in a court, but that doesn't happen often. So considerations from a commercial perspective, I think before you even get to the point of presenting an NDA, there needs to be an element of strategic thinking on the part of the entrepreneur. What are you going to be sharing? To what degree do you need to share in order to secure this contract or opportunity? To what extent can you keep some of the information that is extremely sensitive out of this sharing space? And of course, that, you know, that's a process and will depend on the situation. So firstly, don't share anything you don't actually have to share. And by no means am I saying if it's a sale negotiation, don't be transparent. But I think a good degree of an effective NDA is strategic thinking before the sharing starts. And then, of course, the time limit. Often these agreements love to have time limits in them. My personal opinion is that if sensitive information is sensitive, it doesn't necessarily become less sensitive or confidential in a couple of years' time. So personally, I think it's counterintuitive to include a term as a standard provision in the NDAs. So, and then of course, thinking about the scope, what will you be sharing? and to ensure that it's actually set out that this is what I see as confidential or sensitive information in the context that we'll be sharing. So I think those are the building blocks for the general one between not supplier and consumer necessarily, but the normal commercial sense.
I've seen a couple of variations of this question that have come through, and I've seen it, you know, with my engagements with the venture capital sector, etc. And you often have all of these small business pitching competitions and innovation competitions, and you know, these entrepreneurs sit there and they're caught in this kind of push and pull environment where they want to disclose what it is that they're working on, want to disclose that they that they're attractive to funders. But at the moment they slap an NDA down on the table, the funders or the organizers of the pitching competitions just show them the middle finger per se and say, look, we're not interested in signing these documents. Any thoughts or advice around that and guiding the entrepreneur who finds themselves in a situation where they want to disclose something but at risk of having that information shared with the broader population?
It's difficult. Let's be very honest about this. It's difficult in the start of your business. You are very much in very much what you perceive to be a successful business is very much in your head. And I find that entrepreneurs, particularly those in a technical environment, often feel that they need to share all the technicalities and the back end, if I could compare it to, for example, a software setting, for example, that they'll share some of the methodology to in the coding, etc., which really gives all the information on a silver platter, for lack of a better phrase, to whoever is seeking to poach your idea. So as much as this may sound counterintuitive from an opportunity perspective, the minute someone refuses to sign an NDA, then, you know, I would say your first step needs to be, why don't you want to sign this? Is it because it is a one-sided NDA that it protects me, but it doesn't protect you? Well, in that case, you know, the sword needs to cut both ways. Let's make it a reciprocal NDA. And if they still do not want to sign that, I would really be very worried about the true intentions of the individual. Although in a competition setting, I think it's maybe interesting for us to just note that POPI, the Protection of Personal Information Act, is actually quite helpful in a setting where you pitch or you take part in a competition or you tender. Although it's not active in its completion as yet, it's not fully effective, it does set the stage for us as consumers, for data subjects, as we are called there, to demand and to say, if I tender or I do a proposal for this specific opportunity, what are you going to do with my proposal and all the supporting documents?
Yep.
I want it back. I want it destroyed. So there could be a solution that one could potentially start building into these agreements. But right now, if they don't want to sign it, I would just say big red light should go off in your head.
And maybe this competition issue is quite an interesting one. Obviously, it's quite topical that the Competition Commission has teeth in it and is coming after a number of well-established sectors. I come out of the media sector, so I'm very familiar, for instance, with the anti-competitive claims that are related to, the, for instance, the Advertising Commission that's been based on fines, etc. And you know what happens if you've got an agreement, for instance, between an advertising agency and a publisher, and there's a non-disclosure element to this, and suddenly a regulator comes along and says, I need you to disclose the terms of a particular relationship between supplier and customer. I mean, are there restrictions there? Is there kind of advice that when the Competition Commission arrives and or the investigators at least arrive and say, I'm interested in what is the makeup of this particular relationship. Is there kind of guidelines about what you can disclose? Are you forced to break your non-disclosure agreements? What's the kind of protocol in an instance like that?
Well, a non-disclosure agreement always has a clause in it regarding disclosure or exemptions or exceptions, depending on who the drafter is, I suppose. And these actually list lawful ways in which you are going to be obliged to disclose, regardless of the fact that you've signed. So, of course, if you get called to a commission of inquiry, or you get called to the competition commission, or you find you're being summoned to attend court or to subpoena to be a witness, all these are legal steps that can override or trump the NDA and would oblige whoever is being subjected to having to share to actually share. And it won't actually be a breach of the NDA, because NDAs only operate within a legal framework where you are legally compelled to not breach the confidentiality as such. When a court process or a legal process ensues which obliges you by law to disclose, your NDA is by no means a breach, actually. You'll need to disclose that. So it's always, I think, important if you are finding yourself in that situation that you immediately seek legal advice to ensure that it's not a fraudulent attempt to get you to perhaps breach your NDA. In other words, that it's someone purporting to be from the Competition Commission, but they're not actually. To ensure that you get validly requested to disclose, and when you disclose it, you do so within the confines.
And what constitutes a breach? I mean, you know, we had an instance a while back with one of the venture capital partners who had signed an NDA from one of these pitching competitions, and they subsequently, you know, went out over dinner and they were talking to another partner in the industry, and they said, "Yeah, but had you seen so-and-so was doing this?" And anyway, the story came back to the entrepreneur who had originally forced the venture capitalist to sign an NDA, and they obviously were up in arms saying you breached the an NDA. You know, is it as simplistic as passing a comment over dinner, or are there kind of guidelines about what constitutes a physical breach of a non-disclosure agreement?
Well, in order to answer the question, I think it's important to sort of carve out what are you trying to protect. So if it is a question of if this information gets out into any domain, whether it is online, offline, in a dinner setting, in a meeting, on wherever, then that there'll be damage or prejudice that you'll suffer, then very much so, a dinner comment could constitute a breach. But if it is something that will only actually cause damage if it reaches the general public, then of course your recourse will lie there. I need to make it clear, though, that I'm not saying that if you've signed an NDA that you can have dinner conversation. In fact, as an attorney, I would advise you not to disclose it in any way or form. And if the negotiation is over, that you take the effort to contact the other side if you have any emails or documents or information about them on your system, on your computer, etc., that you ask them what they would like you to do with the information, and rather just get rid of it and circumvent any risk. If we're talking about someone who comes to who realizes that there's been, let's call it a breach over a dinner table, They could have recourse by approaching a high court, for example, and interdicting you from doing that again. Right. So that could be one form of recourse. Or they could sue you for damages. And again, then they'll have to quantify the damages. And that is often where, I said in the beginning, an NDA goes a long way for setting a trend and as a deterrent. But with that being said, an NDA only has as much teeth as the person wanting to enforce it. So you again, it goes back to the strategic thinking. Don't not disclose and not be transparent, but be strategic about your disclosure. unless, of course, you don't mind having to go to court and incurring the legal costs that could be associated. So I think a good NDA, if it's well drafted, and perhaps you look at creative enforcement mechanisms outside of an interdict situation or a damages claim in the any court, doesn't really matter which one, could go a long way in giving it the teeth that it needs so that you are taken seriously and you are protected.
What about the relationship between kind of intellectual property protection mechanisms such as trademarks and patents, for instance, where often I see these NDAs and you can see they've been pulled off templates, which, I mean, they just blanket say you can't disclose anything that has come out of this discussion, which often is poorly worded and poorly defined. But, you know, if you've talked about something, for instance, a technical process which is protected by a patent, I mean, should there be, as an entrepreneur, the intent to protect your intellectual using that as the mechanism for protecting intellectual property instead of using an NDA at every interaction? Because you get into a situation where you keep talking within your network about this idea that you have, but you're not actually protecting the IP, and that non-disclosure should be truly phrased or said to protect in a particular instance or particular engagement, not something that covers all of your blanket engagements.
At the end of the day, it's impractical to blanket everything together. But if you are working off a template, you are in a better position if it covers everything than it doesn't cover enough. Okay. So it's the lesser of two evils in that context. I'm not saying it's always effective, but you know, if you don't have another choice and you don't have an opportunity to have one constructed for a specific purpose, then a template that covers everything is better than one that doesn't cover half of what it should. As for IP protection, usually when you submit your IP registrations, whether it be trademarks or patents, those do take quite a long time to actually go through all the processes for the protection to become effective. So many entrepreneurs are left in a situation where they perhaps haven't made those applications, or they don't know they have to make those applications, or they have and it's not been, the process hasn't been concluded. So the NDA is really in that vacuum, or that situation where there is a vacuum, the only solution that they can put forward to try and protect themselves. So, of course, it's preferable if you have a patentable product or idea or concept, then you should do that. You should do that sooner rather than later. It's worth every cent you spend on it. Same goes with a trademark. And the infringements of that is much, much easier to enforce, because there's no argument about the source of the idea or the concept. There's no burden of proof that you would have to say, listen, you stole my idea because I already had it and I can prove it in this context and on this document, etc. So it becomes less, you don't have to deal with the creation and the ownership component as a first step before proceeding with the rest. Whilst if it is duly registered, you can proceed immediately and say, here's my registration certificate. It's mine. You're using it. You're not paying me any royalties. So either stop, or I'm going to get you an interdict against you, or I'll claim all the royalties that you've, all the profits that you've made off of this are mine because it's mine. So
that might segue quite nicely into this one question that I have emailed, that's been emailed to me here. And it says, can my business partner force me as a co-director to sign a non-disclosure agreement? So that's the first part of the question. So maybe, you know, is it common practice to force your partner or your co-directors to have a non-disclosure agreement in place? Was that part of their employment contract? And the second part of the question relates to it's clearly not been an amicable breakup in this relationship, but effectively they've now broken off into two separate businesses, and the business partner is saying that the one has stolen a database of clients, of existing and potential clients, and the argument is that they should have been forced by under the NDA that they could walk off with this data. Thoughts around a situation like that?
Well, firstly, it's quite unusual to have a partner sign the NDA. If we're talking about a shareholder, confidentiality provisions are included usually in your shareholders agreement, which is an extract of an NDA. And it's also expected of officers of a company, the directors, to act in good faith and with proper purpose to fulfill the director's duties. And keeping confidence is part of that. So I would actually rather deal with it. Of course, it's legislated to a large extent in the Companies Act. But I would actually deal with it in a director service level agreement, which is often not given to your non-executive directors. Your executives tend to have a employment contract where you deal with restraint and with confidentiality. But for some reason, we don't see our non-executives as that much of a risk. So very important, I think, to ensure that all directors have a service level agreement setting out expectations, remuneration, and including restraints and confidentiality. As for the competition happening between the businesses that have split, when the split happened, you should have actually, I don't know if there was an advisor involved, but part of the split should have been a negotiation around who takes which clients and how you'll be dealing with it, etc. If this hasn't happened, if you can prove that there's been solicitation of those customers, then there are a number of options in terms of recourse. So one could look at damages claims, you could look at interdicts. There are a number of obviously very aggressive remedies that I've just mentioned, or it could be as simple, let's go back to the drawing board and let's come to an agreement around this topic. We reduce it to writing and hopefully it resolves the situation. But at this point, an NDA wouldn't have helped, in my view, simply because the argument can always be by the person doing the solicitation that these people came to me from out of their free will. I did not solicit any of the customers that you now say I've poached from you. So NDAs have a very specific purpose, and they've got certain parameters and limitations. So what you need to protect needs to be constructed in the correct agreement.
It maybe then brings us on to the question about an NDA and an employer-employee relationship. And I think that this is one of the, you know, some businesses are very pedantic in this, and they will, anybody who comes into any kind of management, but I mean, maybe some guidelines around who should be signing an NDA when you're looking at an organization, and then also, you know, how do you, you know, what's the kind of the limitation in terms of once somebody has signed it, do you enforce stuff over a period of time? Does it lapse after a period of time? Any kind of guidelines there that the listeners could look at or consider?
Well, usually, NDA is presented to someone who wouldn't be working with you on a permanent basis. So perhaps perhaps someone like an intern or a student, someone like that would probably be best suited to sign an NDA. Right. Although I would recommend that you regulate the whole relationship, not just the confidentiality, and therefore present them with a fixed term employment contract or a temporary employment contract as it may, and ensure that the provisions regarding the confidentiality are built in there. Then as for employees, it's often NDAs, or call it confidentiality provisions, and restraints of trade are often like two peas in a pot. So you have the confidentiality element, which is, you know, that whatever you get exposed to, you cannot take, make your own and benefit from it. Similarly, you cannot take what you've learned here, solicit a clients or staff, etc., and springboard your way to success. The Competition Act actually speaks of that concept of springboarding. So with employees, it's really an important, a very important aspect to consider is something like the protectable interest that you're trying to deal with. And that is the restraint of trade portion of it. And it's usually confined to a specific area for a specific period of time. So it's not something, so you won't present an NDA to an employee necessarily, or a temporary or a permanent one. You'll have the provisions and you'll package it a little differently, because it's about what you're really trying to protect and regulate. Just briefly, I know we haven't had this question, but regarding NDAs and suppliers, with regards to Poppy and the information suppliers could be exposed to when they serve you, it could be your IT supplier, or a photocopy machine supplier, whatever the case may be, it is quite important to ensure that confidentiality provisions regarding data and how they'll deal with it and to what degree they're sharing it and all these things are built into all your agreements, your supplier agreements, etc. Or that you request the supplier's agreement to make provision for certain steps for them to ensure that they won't be breaching any confidentiality or privacy laws by sharing any information, willingly or unwillingly. So I think it's important just to observe Poppy in that regard.
A question that's coming here, and it's quite an interesting one. I mean, I obviously do quite a lot of consulting, so end up having to sign a number of NDAs. And the question comes through saying, I signed an NDA with my company, but I've been privy to serious corporate governance issues inside the business. Am I allowed to make a protected disclosure of this to a board member and or shareholder without being prejudiced, or alternatively a regulatory authority? And what happens if I do make this disclosure? Can I be charged?
Well, it really depends on the disclosure. If we're talking about laws that have been breached, then, of course, the whistleblowing provisions would kick in or be applicable, and your disclosure could actually be protected from breaching the NDA, from a damages claim, and all of that. Of course, again, I urge the person who's posed the question, take your question to an attorney, show them the agreement that you've signed, tell them what you would like to disclose, and then take advice on the matter. If you disclose it to an attorney, remember attorney-client privilege applies. And privilege is a much, much more strenuous concept than confidentiality. Privilege is something that cannot be broken unless there are very extreme circumstances, such as someone's life is in danger, etc. So I would recommend that this person actually takes advice to ensure that they would be protected under the whistleblowing provisions, because that's what this sounds like, before they make any disclosures.
Coming into another question here, is there a limit to the duration of an NDA? I've been presented with an NDA for a 10-year period, but the wording seems to be quite broad and basically limits me to talk about not talking about a concept for a period of 10 years seems unrealistic.
Now, to be frank, that is a little unrealistic, but again, my personal opinion is that something is sensitive or it isn't. It cannot be sensitive now, and of course I'm generalizing when I say this. Right. There are certain aspects that could be sensitive pre-launch and become less sensitive post-launch. So I think it's important to not then sign a stock standard blanketed NDA that just covers pretty much any conversation you've ever had in the last decade. To be very specific and to ask the question, what exactly are we going to be not talking about for the next decade? And to get absolute clarity on that. If you've already signed it, that's the only way that you'll potentially be able to know what the next steps are. But general advice would be not to share anything that isn't in the public domain.
And then we come into another question here on the Q&A, and it relates to kind of the relationship between an NDA and a restraint of trade. And the question is, I was approached to develop an app for a potential client who referred us to a similar app and then asked us to sign a five-year NDA and included the one condition, which I considered to be more of a restraint of trade. I don't want to go into the actual the nitty-gritty of the of this paragraph, but I mean, what's the relationship between an NDA versus a restraint of trade document?
Well, I must be honest with you, I've seen many NDAs in my life, and about the last 3 years, it's become a trend to combine the NDA with restraints, which is a bit unusual, to be honest, because if you're saying this, that no sharing of the confidential information is to take place in any way, any form, etc., then of course it goes without saying that using the information in a way that would compete with the person whose information you are bound to keep in confidence becomes a little nonsensical. I mean, the one sort of leads to the other. So if the one is prohibited, so should the rest. So it is a little unorthodox. I've seen very few where it actually made logical sense. It's superfluous. So it's not really anything to be worried about if you've signed that. It would have gone without saying that if you signed the NDA, you wouldn't be able to utilize the information the other party gave you that is sensitive, that isn't in the public domain, to solicit the employees with or poach clients, etc. So I think if there is an opportunity that could potentially breach this, it's important to get advice and to see if the interpretation really extends to that.
The last question that's come through, we'll wrap up shortly. The question that's come through was that I've signed an NDA and I actually didn't realize what I was signing at the time. What is kind of good practice in terms of either reversing it, cancelling the terms? You know, do I need to go and sign a new contract, new document? Or, you know, what's the kind of process for cancelling an NDA?
Well, if you've already signed it and the agreement is silent about how to cancel or when it terminates in terms of time, then your only recourse would be to contact the person who's in the NDA and to say, okay, so let's negotiate canceling this and then, of course, broaching the topic that way. Obviously, on the receiving side, one needs to be mindful of the fact that if you were to get such a request from someone, you would immediately think, but what do you want to do with my information if you want us to cancel this agreement? Right. So I think it's good to take advice on how to present such a negotiation, to say, to make it clear, listen, I'm not going to contravene this. My intentions are the following, and to articulate that properly so that you do not create a misconception that you're seeking to cancel to do something unlawful or anti-competitive.
Yeah, but one last question has been mailed in here from one of a tech provider, and it's quite an interesting one here, relating to, they aggregate financial data, so it's not a credit bureau, but I suppose the question would be similar in nature, is they're effectively saying they aggregate the data out of financial, out of accounting packages, And they say, what happens if I have 10 clients that are on the system? I've aggregated the industry margins for a particular industry. Am I allowed to share that data as part of my software product?
Well, it depends what degree of the data you are sharing. So if you are going to share statistical data, where you are not using identifiers to who gave you or who's the data subject related to the stat, then in theory, you should be able to do that. Similarly, if you have any concerns about maybe publishing that this is the work you're doing for this specific person, why not just get a consent from your customer saying that you are allowed to say that you've done work for them and that you are allowed to include it in your portfolio. From a data perspective, you need to take reasonable steps to safeguard the information in your control. So if you've done that, there shouldn't be any concerns. The Act POPI only requires reasonable steps towards the protection of privacy, which is the same that in the commercial aspect, the same right that a NDA tries to protect, which is why I keep bringing it in as being relevant. So firstly, I would say if it's statistical information, there shouldn't be a problem. But if you want to build a portfolio and share the technicality or a portion of what you've done for the specific customer, it's better to just get consent from them before you share.
Don't have any other further questions. So maybe just, do you have any closing remarks for entrepreneurs who'd be interested in looking for, considering an NDA and kind of what anything that you may not have touched on in the previous questions?
Oh, thank you. Firstly, I think if you cannot afford to go and have a set of NDAs, because you may not only need one, you may need a few for different types of relationships. If you can't go through that process right now, having a general one is an okay starting point. And then, of course, building out all your contracts as you start engaging different types of agreements or different types of persons or relationships. It's important for you to construct the way in which you're going to regulate the relationship. And it goes a long way to make that investment and to have it done properly. And then, of course, to ensure that you register your trademarks and patents the minute you are able to do so. That is a cost that you really shouldn't leave for later. And then, of course, having your toolkit of agreements in place as a starting point. And our online contract builder tool, the SME self-service desk, has gone a long way to achieve that. It's a good starting point. It's a good point of building up on so that you've got a sound foundation of legal documents which you can evolve as your business grows and evolves. You need not purchase the most expensive range of car, for example. We can start with a fairly reliable family special, if you know what I mean. So you can build it up as your business needs it and as the costs justify it. For more information about this, go to www.schoemanlaw.co.za and you'll see a tab called SME Self-Service. And more information about our tool and all of that is available on there. As I said, there are 37 documents, including an NDA on there, for 10% of the usual cost. So if you would go to an attorney, the average price of an average NDA would be about 3,500 rand. So you're looking at about 395 rand. It's the same document that you would have received as a starting point from us if a human had to draft it. So there's absolutely no compromise on quality. We've just cut the human element out of it.
I think that's fantastic. I mean, I think this is one of the challenges entrepreneurs are so worried about costs that they don't actually look after their assets and their business. And I think this is an excellent tool to encourage them to be more proactive in that regard.
Yes, and registration on the platform is absolutely free. If you want to play around and see what it can do, there are 4 documents on there that are always available for free. Sale agreements for fixed property, for freehold, and for sectional title. That showcases what the technology can do in its totality. And then we've got BEs, affidavits, which you can generate for EME or QSE. These are notoriously poorly completed in our experience, and it makes it easier for you to complete the document, to print a couple, and to go and have it commissioned. So feel free to test it. The direct link to the platform is www.skumanlaw.com.
Excellent. Thank you. Nicolina, I appreciate your time to join us today. I'm going to share these links with you over email, and I'll share it with the participants and registrants of this as well as over social media. And we look forward to engaging going forward.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.
Bye.